Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What a hit. No punt. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And we welcome you into Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we break down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. Two ways for you to interact with us here on the program. You can give us a ring at 201-939-4513, or you could use hashtag GiantsChat on Twitter. We will be getting to your tweets a little bit later on in the program. And the question for today's show is, who do you think will lead the Giants in tackles this season? We want to hear from you via Twitter, on the phones as well. That will be the main theme. Paul and I will also get into some storylines connected to OTAs, some injury news and so forth as we open up every single day the discussion to just about anything that you want to get into. Paul, how's everything?
Good to see you again, Lance.
Same here.
Team has had four OTAs to this point. They've still got several more to go spread out over the course of the next week or so. Today is not one of those, so it's a bit sparse around the complex today. Coach is still around. Some of the rookies are around. Guys working out and so forth, but no field activity today. Remember, the CBA regulates this stuff rather strictly, and so there will be nothing going down on the field or in the field house. Finally, the rain has stopped. I know you were out of town with the NCAA baseball tournament. The rain had pretty much soaked things around here the last couple of days.
Flooded some of the areas, too.
Indeed, it did. So the Giants were in the field house yesterday. Again, today, nobody on the fields at all. So that's kind of a change from what we've seen the last couple of days.
And in terms of OTAs, that'll continue on Friday.
That's yes.
The next time that the Giants will be out on the field, and then they'll have another one on Monday. So certainly that is something to look forward to when the team continues to work out, continues to solidify roles. I'm sure you addressed some of the injury news yesterday, Paul, but let's just rehash at least what Tom Coughlin went over. Larry Donnell is in a walking boot because of an Achilles injury that he had suffered back in college. They're not overly concerned, but obviously as a precaution, they are holding him on the sideline. Odell Beckham has a sore hamstring. It's not the same hamstring that he injured last year. It's the other hamstring. Once again, it's also a precaution, so nothing to be overly concerned about with respect to that.
Both guys said they would play Sunday if there was a game.
Correct. They did emphasize that, especially Odell Beckham, and he emphasized that when he spoke to Giants.com. So that is important to note. In terms of other injuries, Matt Burhey is dealing with a calf injury, so he has yet to get out on the field. And this has opened up an opportunity, Paul, and Tom Coughlin spoke about this when he addressed the media, for Cooper Taylor to really be one of the main safeties in the mix working with Landon Collins as he tries to, number one, stay healthy himself and also become a good fit within Spags' system.
You know, it's funny because when the Giants drafted Cooper Taylor, they saw a safety that was pretty darn good at coming forward, was solid on the blitz, looked like he could be a good-in-the-box safety, especially against the run. And then 2 years of injuries basically derailed any hopes they had of seeing what this guy could do on the field. Very limited snaps over the course of both camps and the preseason from this guy. So they're still here now in year three trying to figure out, what is he? What can he give us? It's time now with the safety position so wide open. Let's face it. I mean, outside of Landon Collins, second-round draft pick, you know he's going to be there. But there's a lot of snaps to be earned. And as you say, with the absence of Burhey right now because of that calf thing, Cooper Taylor's been the guy who's been the beneficiary of that. Bennett Jackson has also been able to get a lot of extra work as he comes back off of microfracture surgery. This is very important to these guys because they've got to hit the ground running. When training camp starts, okay, at the end of July, early August, whenever that date officially comes out, those guys need to be absolutely on par, on tee, because they're not going to have more than a month to show their wares and to tell Coach Coughlin, I belong on the 53. I mean, time gets short real fast.
We're in June already. I'm looking at the calendar. Before you know it, Paul, it's going to be training camp, and we're going to have a preseason game. It's nonstop.
It's coming up real fast. In fact, we were talking yesterday with John, and he was talking about the weather with me, and I said, it's pretty cold for May. He goes, what do you mean May? It's June.
Exactly.
Really? I didn't flip my calendar yet.
Mid-50s in New York City in the month of June. I'm not complaining, certainly. I know you like the warm weather.
Oh, man.
Because you got to maintain the tan. So for you, this is disrupting the schedule.
I'm fading. Look at this.
Well, I mean, to most people, that wouldn't be considered a fade, especially to someone like me. I'd say you're in pretty good shape, at least if I am the comparison. One other thing that I want to throw out with respect to training camp, actually, connected to that, and Tom Coughlin answered a question about how they are going to have a few practices with the Bengals leading up to that first preseason game this coming year, and that is something that the Giants haven't done over the last few years. But, you know, one of the things that Tom Coughlin pointed out, Paul, is, you know, he feels this is an extra way to get the team a little bit amped up, a little bit in season, not so much for the preseason, but for that week one game against the Cowboys, to get them sort of already in midseason form by going up against somebody else other than their own teammates.
I will say this, Lance. It's apparent to me at this early stage of the offseason, and I'm going to still use the word early because, you know, we are early June. This team has a buzz around it. I mean, I sense it. And, you know, you've been around for a few years now. I mean, I've been around many more years than people can remember. Some people don't want to remember.
but you will remember, and you'll remind them.
But my point is, rarely in the last several years have I felt the type of buzz and type of energy coming from the players as a whole as I feel right now. I sense a tremendous amount of enthusiasm, eagerness, optimism, excitement, if you will. And, you know, again, not that it's ever dead around here. It's not. I mean, the offseason's the offseason, and guys are always looking forward to getting ready and doing what they have to do. But I absolutely feel an edge. I feel something different about this spring. And maybe that's because they think that the 2 years of injuries are behind them. Maybe that's because they like some of the things that the young players showed at the end of last year, the flashes that made people think that this team is really on its way up. Maybe it's just that they think that the last two draft classes of last year's and this year's is full of so many good young players that that's going to infuse. I can't pinpoint exactly what it is, but I do sense a live buzz coming out of this camp right now, and that's a good thing.
Absolutely. You have some new faces on the roster, as you just pointed out, plus you have some new faces on the coaching staff too, especially a new defensive coordinator, and that sometimes can reinvigorate the team, and I think we're starting to see that. Let's get to the question of the show, and then we're going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513. So we're asking you, who will lead the team in tackles this season? Now, if you go back to last year, Jameel McClain led the team in tackles. Antrell Roll was second. Jaquan Williams was third. So two of the three top tacklers were out of the linebacker spot. And, Paul, I would probably lean back towards that position this season. I'm going to go with Devon Kennard, and I've been very high on him. I think he's going to be an X factor within Spags' defense because I think they're going to utilize him in a variety of different positions as a pass rusher, as a tackler, and so forth. I'm going to say right now as it stands, Devon Kennard could very well lead this team in tackles in 2015.
Not a bad pick. I think that there are some other very good candidates as well. Certainly John Beeson, if he's able to stay on the field, would be one. Remember, Antonio Pierce led the Giants' defense in tackles in 2007 and 2008 when Spags was the defensive coordinator the first time around. But the guy who was right behind Pierce, at least in the 2007 season, because then he went free agent and signed with the Dolphins, was free safety Jabril Wilson. That year, Wilson had 92 tackles. And as you know, folks, a lot of times safeties are high on the tackle list. That's not uncommon in the NFL.
Yeah, Roll was second last season.
Pierce, that particular year, had 103, and Jabril had 92. He was second to the middle linebacker. Landon Collins is a guy who we believe is going to be very active in this defense. So might he be a candidate for this? Perhaps. Might the other safety, whoever wins that other spot, could he be the candidate? Could Nat Burhe be a candidate for this? Potentially. Could it be McClain?
JT Thomas.
You know, maybe John Beeson winds up getting hurt. You hope he doesn't, but if he does, does Thomas or McClain wind up being the guy? I do think there are certainly a couple of names you could throw around. It's not just a lock, stock, and barrel, okay, it's going to be this guy. I do think there are candidates here, and so we offer that question to you guys today.
Sounds good. And let's open up the phone lines with that being said at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on Twitter. We'll get to your tweets throughout the course of the program as we take you up till 1 p.m. Eastern. Jason gets us going in New Jersey. Jason, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, yeah. Regarding the offensive line, I just wanted to say that I think it really comes down to just the sit spot because, as you said, we got to get the best five guys, and we can pretty much pencil in Flowers, Pugh, Richburg, and Short. So it really comes down to the battle between John Jerry versus Marshall Newhouse because if you look at their contracts, both signed two-year around $3 million deals, and they both got, like, $1 million guaranteed. So they're the two front runners for that fifth spot. And I think if that's the competition during the preseason, then John Jerry will easily beat out Newhouse because Newhouse will be the first-team right tackle. He's going to be underwhelming in the preseason because I did watch his tape last year, right tackle with the Bengals, and it wasn't pretty at all. The one good thing that he does do well is he's a really good screen blocker. So on those slip screens like Giovanni Bernard and stuff, he got out in front and he walled it off pretty well. But he's a poor pass blocker and he's a poor run blocker, and that doesn't bode well at right tackle. So the way I look at it is John Jerry's going to be a second-team right guard. He's probably going to go up against backups, and he's going to dominate backups. Just like if you look at the preseason last year, the final preseason game, John Jerry had his most dominant performance in that last preseason game against the Patriots because he had a job on the line, and because of that performance, he moved into the starting lineup. So I feel like when there's a job to be had, John Jerry steps it up, and I think he's going to easily beat out Newhouse. It's going to be John Jerry at right guard, and Jeff Schwartz at right tackle, and that's good because part of the reason why you put Justin Pugh at left guard is because you want to run that the strong side off-tackle play where the center pins down, the left guard pulls right, and the right tackle seals his man. So with Jeff Schwartz at right tackle, if you watch the tape of Week 12 last year against the Cowboys where Jeff Schwartz started at right tackle, he did a really good job of sealing the edge on runs towards the right side.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, Jason, I think it really comes down to whether or not the Giants want to put him at the right tackle spot. I mean, right now they seem to be content with him at a guard position. You're envisioning them moving him outside and then obviously opening the door at right guard. But I think it really comes down to the coaching staff's philosophy. When Jeff Schwartz spoke to the media, this was at the beginning of OTAs, he obviously ruled out he's not going to left tackle. He made that very clear. And he seemed to indicate, Paul, that you know right now they seem to be comfortable with him as a guard with respect to the offensive line.
I think that's the first choice. The caller, unless I'm mistaken, I don't know, is that your first choice or is that just option B that you're using as a contingency plan?
That right seemed to be your first choice.
I mean,
that's your first choice.
With Q at left guard. So, I mean, you want a strong run blocking right tackle right there. So I think, I mean, it comes down to who's the better player between Newhouse and Jerry. And I think it's not even a question. John Jerry's a much better offensive lineman than Marshall Newhouse. So, if you want to get the best five, and the preseason will bear that out. I think John Jerry's going to play a lot better than Newhouse in the preseason. And
Time will tell. You know, the other thing, Jason, to note, you know, you were talking about Marshall Newhouse's past. He's never worked with Pat Flaherty. So, you know, let's keep that in mind. He's got a new voice in his head. And also, you know, he started off his career with the Green Bay Packers as a young up-and-coming offensive lineman, and he was used all over the place. So, you know, I mean, I think the appeal for him is that he has versatility. He can play a few different positions. Let's see how he performs within this system, despite all of a sudden noting what he did or didn't do with respect to the Cincinnati Bengals.
I think the only other thing I would add to that, to be fair to Newhouse, he's still a rather young veteran, and this is his third team. He's also got to be thinking to himself, well, if I don't kick it up and produce at the level that some people think I can, I may not be long for the league. So there may also be a sense of urgency here that perhaps you didn't see earlier in his career that might bring out some more in him. I mean, the bottom line is this. The Giants are going to let these guys work it out on the field. And it's possible that the five you're presenting will be the five opening day against the Cowboys. It absolutely could happen that way. I think we're just going to have to let it play out during the course of camp and the preseason games. I don't think that's the five that they want to work out. I think they would rather have Schwartz playing right guard if everything goes well and those five can assert themselves as the starters. But I do think that your option is absolutely viable. I don't think that's their priority, but I think it's viable.
And Jason, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's head back to the lines. Oren is in Virginia. Oren, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, Lanson.
Paul. It's all right. Don't worry. Listen, we forget he's here too sometimes. So no offense taken, Oren. Appreciate the call. What do you have for us?
My bad, Paul.
That's okay, man.
I just wanted to talk about, has Coach been talking to Jason Pierre-Paul and stuff? When is he coming back, you know? Because he needs to be here, you know, learning the new defense and stuff.
Coach has communicated with JPP. He's also communicated, that is the player, with Coach Spagnuolo. And so Coach Coughlin has also said he expects JPP to be here when the mandatories begin, the actual mini camp themselves, those workouts. The only thing I would say to you this is that contractually speaking, the franchise tag needs to be signed by July 15th. So that's a very important date so that, hey, if JPP is thinking about, well, I'm just looking at the business angle of this and I'm not thinking about anything else, July 15th is a very critical date for him to be signing it. I don't sense that there's any problem here. I think everybody understands the way the business of the NFL works, and this is simply going to play itself out. I believe that JPP will be here. I do believe he will sign the one-year franchise tender, and quite honestly, I believe he's going to have a big year.
Okay. I hear Odell's hurt and stuff now. He pulled his hamstring or something like that.
Well, he's just dealing with a hamstring injury. The Giants haven't publicly said anything about what exactly the injury is, but Tom Coughlin did note that it's the complete other hamstring than what he dealt with last season.
It is sore. It wasn't that he hurt it in practice or anything like that. It was just sore, and they decided not to to work him out yesterday.
Okay. And I feel like this year is gonna be a good year for Eli and the offense and stuff. As long as that rookie left tackle does good, I feel like Eli, the offense, now he knows it. He knows it now and all that. Now he can, you know, do more things with it now. And then especially Odell's got more experience, Ruben and all of them. I feel like Ruben's gonna step it up the most. I think by the, you know, double team and all that on Odell and Victor and all that. And, you know, he's trying to get that contract. Because I don't think he wants to leave the team.
Well, that's obviously a motivational tool, Oren, that hopefully Ruben Randall will take advantage of, and appreciate the phone call. What the last caller just picked up on is something also that Tom Coughlin was asked about when he spoke to the media earlier this week, Paul. He was asked, how far along has the offense come from where you ended the 2014
right.
campaign? And he talked about there's familiarity with the jargon of the system. So Ben McAdoo is not installing things now. And I go back to what McAdoo said earlier this offseason, Paul, and this, I think, is probably the best way to describe where this offense has gone. They were installing it last year. Now he calls it their offense.
Mm-hmm.
They're not tinkering with the offense. It is their offense. They're molding it to the player's strengths. They're not at the point where they're learning the ABCs anymore. And if you look at the productivity in the last few games of last season, listen, put aside the opponents, just the chemistry, how everybody seemed to be on the same
execution.
Page. The execution. I think that's at least a positive that they could carry over into training camp.
I think the word that one of the guys used, and I can't remember specifically who it was, but I also believe that Coach Coughlin may have used it at one point, said that it's more instinctive now as opposed to guys having to constantly think about the plays.
You just do it.
They're just doing it. And that helps. There's no question about that. By the way, the one thing I do want to add about this offensive situation, the addition of Marine is really going to be dynamic for these guys because he is such an outstanding weapon coming out of the backfield. He's got terrific hands. He knows how to find the openings. He's very, very good at finding those short pass openings in zones. Works very well against linebackers. You know, this offense, this McAdoo West Coast style of offense, has that built-in safety valve for the check down. We talked about that going into last year. It was going to be one of the things that Eli was going to have to adapt to because the Giants never really ran anything like that under Gilbride. Well, the problem was, Andre Williams, that was not his finest skill.
Barely had any receptions in college.
Okay. Rashad Jennings wound up getting hurt early in the season. and wound up missing, what, half the year. So that whole portion of the playbook, that whole check down, short passing, running back in the flat screen kind of game, we really didn't get to see much of that at all. And we talked about it going into the season. Now you're going to get a chance to see it because that's Vereen's specialty. So that's going to add another whole look to this Giants offense that people haven't been used to.
And if Jennings can stay healthy, we know he's effective as a wide receiver, and Andre Williams continues to improve. And piggybacking off of your point, Paul, you look at the numbers from last season. Rashad Jennings finished, and obviously he was hurt. He was right behind Victor Cruz, so he finished as the sixth leading receiver on the team in terms of receptions with 30. Then Andre Williams was two spots behind him. He had 18. Peyton Hillis had 10. They had 383 receptions as a team. The running backs only combined for about 50 total. This season, they certainly going to look to get that number up. I want to head to Twitter before we head back to the lines.
I was only going to say one thing to you. Vereen. What did he do last year?
In terms of his totals. Oh, yeah. I'm sure he probably surpassed all of them.
And last year, 52 catches.
There you go. So he had pretty much the equivalent of what the entire Giants backfield had in total. Now,
you have to
understand there were injuries, so Rashad Jennings wasn't on the field all the time. But that just goes to show you, like you said, Paul, Shane Vereen's going to bring a new facet to the table for this offense.
Yes.
On Twitter, everybody's weighing in on who's going to lead the team in tackles. Big Dash 07088. At ColeWiss88, bold prediction. He says Devon Kennard will lead in sacks, not tackles. That is his bold prediction for this season.
I would say this. I think everybody around here would probably rather see JPP do it because that means he'd have a big, big double-digit sack season, and that would bode well for this team. If Kennard has a big sack season, and I'm not saying that he's not capable of getting 8, 9, 10. I'm not saying that. But if that's the most, that's not good. I wouldn't mind seeing him being the second leading sacker on the team. I think if you had to ask the coaching staff right now who's going to be leading sacker, who would you want to be, what's a good indication that the team's doing well, it would be that JPP has like 15.
I think they would take that. I don't think anybody would be complaining about that.
I remember last year Coach was saying about JPP, middle of the season, remember, you get off to the slower start, and Coach was saying, look, I don't need 16 out of him like he got a few years back. I'll take 12.
Well, he got 12 and a half.
He finished strong.
Correct. Very strong finish. And we know sacks come in bunches.
Yeah.
That's been well documented regardless of what team you're on and where you stack in the rankings. Kennard last season had 4.5. And he didn't get that much playing time compared to some of the other players on the team. Can he double that? Can he get 7 or 8 this season? I don't think that's a stretch in terms of how you look at the layout of this defense.
Yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised if he got 8 or 9. You know, that would not shock me at all. But, look, I really like him. I think he's a terrific young player, and I really like his ceiling. However, I don't think he's like a 14, 15 sack guy. We're not talking about Lawrence Taylor here.
Well, that would be a humongous jump after not playing that much during the course of his rookie campaign. Down the road, perhaps, depending on what the system calls for him. Right now, I'd say that would be a huge surprise.
He's probably more of a Byron Hunt type of player, you know? And folks out there, I know a lot of you younger guys may not remember him all that well, number 57. But Byron Hunt was a very good linebacker and could have been not just a starter, but a very high-profile player for a lot of other teams. But with the Giants, when you had the great linebackers that they had, you know, he was kind of overshadowed.
Hard to get on the field.
But he was a solid, solid player. And I see Kennard in that mode.
Speaking of Kennard on Twitter, Ben at BigBen_Z. I'd love to see Kennard pull this off for sure in terms of leading the team with tackles. A dominant Giants linebacker would be beautiful. Let's see who else is weighing in on this topic before we head back to the phones. Jay Satchel at flight_J23. He throws out the same name that Paul threw out earlier. He says Landon Collins will likely lead the team in tackles, who you had pinpointed earlier.
The one thing I want to mention about Collins, Lance, is that not only do we think he's going to start, but remember something. Because of the way that the Giants' defense is structured, there's a good chance that they might still use some of that three-headed safety package that they used under Perry Fuel. I don't think Spags is adverse to doing some of that, especially with the Giants' lack of pass coverage depth at linebacker. Well, if they do that, Collins may wind up playing pseudo linebacker in the sub package, which should add to his tackle totals.
Really be closer to the box, yeah.
So, you know, if he's, let's just say, the strong or the free safety on first and second down, but then a pseudo linebacker on third down, he will see more snaps than probably John Beeson will see, and he may wind up with more tackles just because he'll be in the box.
Well, his versatility can't hurt him in terms of helping his cause with respect to tackles because of the fact that you can put him in coverage, and like you said, depending on the personnel on the field on offense, you can maybe bring him closer to the box if you need an extra tackler. So I think that's going to help his cause when it's all said and done. Let's head back to the lines at 201-939-4513. Vic is in Florida. Vic, what's happening?
Hey, good afternoon, Lance, and buongiorno, Paolo. How are you today?
Good to talk to you.
Good afternoon, Vic.
Yeah, listen,
what do you got?
I have to agree with Lance on the leader in tackles, Kennard. I go with Kennard and probably Collins second. Okay, that's my view. The other question I wanted to ask is that, Paul, did you see any flashes in Matt LaCosse during the OTA?
During the OTAs, you're talking about non-contact drills, okay? So remember that, which basically means there are only limited things you can see that will make you feel good about a particular player. Yes, I like him. I've said that to you before. I didn't see anything differently than I saw in the rookie minicamp simply because these remain non-contact drills.
Right,
we got to
right,
see
right.
when they actually get the pads on and they start hitting each other. And then, of course, in the real training camp and in the preseason games, that's going to be the next real eye test for any of these newcomers. And so I don't have much to add other than what I've already told you.
Okay. Okay, Paul, the other thing is that I have to agree with the first caller as far as the offensive line is concerned. I would put Schwartz at right tackle and Jerry at right guard. Richburg at center, Pugh at left guard, and Flowers at left tackle. That's my view, and that's what I think the best way to go is. I mean, that's only my perception, okay?
All right, Vic, appreciate the phone call. And as Paul and I mentioned off the top of the show, you know, this is the time for the Giants to get creative and have players go on opposite sides of the offensive line, learn different positions, just so that you can see which five mesh the best together. I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that, and that's the goal and the vision of the team. What we're going to see in training camp could be very different from what is all of a sudden laid out in terms of OTAs at this point.
Tom Coughlin talks about opportunity for these guys, and he's going to mix and match and do whatever he can to find the best guys possible. And better you do it now than the middle of September
after
the regular season starts. You really don't want to be fussing around moving guys then, unless there are injuries, of course, because that will spell disaster. So they're going to find whatever combination works as quickly as they possibly can. And if that means it takes to the third preseason game, fine. The bottom line is they need the best five out there against the Cowboys in week one.
Week one. That is the goal. That is what you circle on the calendar. September 13th. You're not worried about August 14th, August 22nd, the 29th, and September 3rd. You want those five to be ready to go week one.
Yeah.
That's the goal. And that's the calendar, and that is basically the sequence of events that needs to take place. Let's head back to Twitter. Want to work in as many tweets as possible over the show. Certainly appreciate everybody chiming in on the question of the program, which is who is going to lead the Giants in tackles this season. Joe at JCS02008 says, I think Jameel McClain will get the most tackles if Beeson gets hurt. And that's what happened this past season. McClain wound up leading the team in tackles. We have people that are interacting with us on this program who are in Mexico, Paul.
Wow.
Weighing in, yes, saying he wants us to say hello to the Mexican Giants fans. Certainly we appreciate everybody following the program.
Hola,
this
right?
Is correct. Yes, if you want to throw in the multiple languages, at Advert Publil, if I had that correct, or
okay.
Publi, excuse me. Do you think that if Odell Beckham is hurt with Cruz at 60%, we don't have that much in terms of wide receiver depth?
Wow. It's hard for me to imagine that Odell Beckham will do much less than what he did last year. Now, to ask him to repeat it exactly may be a little much. To ask him to get better may be a little much. because he's going to get a lot more attention for sure than what he got last year, even though teams started to focus on him a bit during the stretch. But if Odell Beckham Jr. gives the Giants even 90% of what they of what he gave them last year, you know, he's a frontline Pro Bowl player. Anytime you start with that, you got a pretty good base. So I kind of disagree. I think they got enough there. I mean, even if Cruz is not what Cruz is supposed to be, between Beckham and Randall and Dwayne Harris,
who's looked very good in OTAs thus far. How about Marcus Harris, too? Let's not forget about him.
Is Marcus Soup Harris? Is Corey Washington still a part of that mixture? You know, yeah, it's hard for me. And don't forget Jeremy Davis, the UConn wide receiver they just picked up in the sixth round. It's hard for me to think that the Giants are going to take much of a dip at the receiver spot, even if Cruz isn't quite right. And you know what? Again, let me stress something to you folks. Every time I see him and I talk to him, he starts making me sway more and more to the fact that he's going to be good. And that maybe I'm being a little too overly cautious. I mean, God knows I'm trying to be conservative about this. I don't want to get my hopes up too high. But, boy, Victor keeps pulling me. It's like, come on, man. I'm going to be okay.
Well, he's pushing himself, too, on the field in terms of running routes. So, I mean, obviously that's why he's feeling very good about himself. He's optimistic. It doesn't take much out of you to get you all worked up. We know in terms of your past history.
Look, to this point, he's passing the eye test.
I would agree.
That's all I can say.
And that's what he needs to continue to progress and do. And obviously you want to see, hopefully, maybe by the time training camp comes around, that you know he starts getting involved in terms of defenses while he's running routes and catching passes and so forth. But he's doing the small little things that
really
you hope are going to add up when it comes time to the regular season. And as far as the last tweet, you know, we could play the game a hypothetical. I can't emphasize enough. Odell Beckham, sore hamstring. You know, let's not make this bigger than it has to be at this point. I understand that when Giants fans hear hamstring, they're like, oh, my God, here we go again. What happened at the start of last season? But there is no indication that the panic button should be hit just because Odell Beckham, out of precaution, sat out one OTA.
That was the left, by the way, and this is the right. Not that it makes much difference.
But Tom Coughlin did emphasize
that
it is a different hamstring. It's not a re-aggravation of perhaps what he was dealing with in the past. Let's head back to the phone lines. Andrew is in Pennsylvania. Andrew, what's happening?
Hey, guys. What's up? I just wanted to get back on what Paul was talking about in the beginning. I think another reason why there might feel something special about this year, I think with the team getting younger, we don't have all those guys with two Super Bowl rings anymore. All we got is Diasi and Manning. You think the team's just more hungry in general?
Wow. That could be part of it. I think that the defense in particular is extremely excited about some of the new faces that have been brought in over the last year. And I also think that the resurgence, or should I say the return of Steve Spagnuolo, has a lot of people extremely excited. Just hungry? I don't see, the only reason I hesitate to say that, I know these guys were hungry the last 2 years. Guys like Antrell Roll, man, he was starving to win another one. So I kind of hesitate to use the word hungry because I think these guys were hungry the last couple of years. I really do. I don't think it was for lack of want or effort that the Giants didn't make the playoffs. I really don't. I saw these guys balling out. I mean, given everything they had. And, you know, they just didn't have enough. Injuries were certainly a big part of that. See, when you say to me, guys are hungrier, that almost implies that they weren't hungry enough.
They weren't motivated enough, yeah.
And I never saw that. You know, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. That makes sense. But to change topics real quick, I was curious when Beckham was out with the hamstring and Cruz with the knee, what is the first team wide receiver has been looking like? Like, I guess Randall would be the number one. And
right.
I heard he was lining up in the slot. But, like, when they go four wide with the first team, who's out there?
Well, you get Dwayne Harris. Dwayne Harris is out there.
Randall's out there.
Randall's out there. They have, let's see, who else have they used?
Well, Preston Parker's been out
there. Preston Parker.
He's had a few catches.
Preston Parker. And
Corey Washington's gotten some work. not necessarily with the first team, but he's been active. I mean, these are the wide receivers, I would say, who have been out there running routes and doing work, if that at least answers your question.
I mean, you know, here's the one thing I want you to remember, too. Some of these drills that they're going through, they're seven-on-sevens and stuff. Remember, this is it's OTAs. It's not the real stuff, so to speak. It's kind of like pseudo-practices. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I gotcha.
All right, Andrew.
All right, well, thanks a lot, guys.
You got it.
I think Landon Collins and John Beeson should leave.
All right, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in, talking about who's going to lead the team in tackles. He's throwing out Landon Collins and John Beeson, two popular names that have been thrown out.
Yeah, why not? You know, I mean, I think those would be the two favorites, especially if Beeson's healthy. But it's still a good question.
The good news is you have a few guys in the mix, and that means that there's some additional depth and additional weapons yeah. that could very well step in and make an impact. Abdul is in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I think the two leading tacklers will be J.T. Thomas and Landon Collins because of their versatility. I think they both will be on the field more than the other players on defense.
Uh-huh.
I think Collins will be used as a third linebacker, or a safety slash linebacker. And I think J.T. Williams will be out there in coverage.
Thomas, you mean?
On passing downs.
J.T. Thomas.
Right, sorry.
That's all right. No, you're getting him confused with Jaquan Williams, I think. and I understand that.
It was
that.
A mix of both guys into one.
They're both new players, so I'm still getting used to their names.
Yep,
understandable.
So, also, I think there is an excitement amongst the fans and the players, except maybe for the guy Chuck in Maine. He's kind of negative. But I think the atmosphere around the Giants organization is really excited for the return of Steve Spagnuolo. I think that guy is kind of infectious with his positive attitude and his energy. Not to take a shot at Perry Fuel on his way out, but he was a decent coordinator, but I think he just lacked a flexibility. And I was thinking about his first year with the Giants, I'm talking about Fuel, and he had a plan against Peyton Manning in the first Manning Bowl, where he took up most of the defensive linemen and had linebackers stop the pass, and Peyton just audibled into runs the whole game.
Right.
And people didn't switch. And that was just kind of a bad opening. I'm like, really? This is our defensive coordinator? And that was kind of his, you know, he never was good on his feet. He had a plan, and he kind of stuck to it.
I'll only say one thing to be fair, okay? Perry Fuel was the defensive coordinator for that postseason run in 2011, which included a Super Bowl win against Tom Brady and the Patriots, and they held them to a very, very respectable number. And this, by the way, came during a time when Brady had a second and third quarter where he could not miss a pass. I mean, he was as robotic and as perfect as a quarterback could be. And when it came time to the fourth quarter, now I know Wes Welker had that one drop there at the end of the game, but bottom line is Perry Fuel's defense held up, and they became champions. So just to be fair.
He wasn't a bad coordinator, but when his plan wasn't working, he didn't have a plan B. During the run, his defense worked. It was great. But whenever his track record, whenever things weren't going well.
Well, here's what I will say, if I can address that in a backhanded kind of way. One of Steve Spagnuolo's finest traits is his ability to improvise and to change on the fly and to give his players a lot of input into what he does while he's changing on the fly.
Exactly.
That's something that really makes Spags special.
And I think because of that, people are really, really excited for this year's defense. And to switch the subject, yesterday, Paul, you mentioned something about putting a cap on quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And that I really agree with you. I think that's almost becoming, you know, a few years ago, the first draft pick would really just handcuff teams money-wise.
Right.
That's almost happening now with quarterbacks. You know, it's the baseline is now $100 billion for quarterbacks. And that's getting ridiculous right now.
Years ago, when the rookies were getting overpaid, and then the NFL said, well, we're going to have a rookie cap, and we're going to wind up slotting these guys. And it made all the difference in the world. It made things more manageable, and it made things make more sense. And that's exactly along the philosophy that I'm talking about with the quarterbacks. They are out of whack.
I think, like, the owners, like the NBA, they kind of hurt themselves. They need
Well, they always do.
Structure to control, because I understand you need a quarterback in this league. I get it.
Sure.
But I think it's almost spotting your face, cutting off your nose, giving, you know, 1/7 of your whole money to one player.
Well, Abdul, but it gets back to the point as to why it's so important to find undrafted players, why it's so important to do well in the draft. I mean, you have to find other ways to round out your roster. And based on the point that you're bringing up, it's not as if one team is getting away with paying a quarterback $35 million and everybody else
right.
is paying them $100 million. As you see with all the contracts, Cam Newton, who is the latest one that just came out, you know, everybody's pretty much comparable. So every team is working within the same confines of having to pay a quarterback so much money and then having to round out the roster a different way.
Did you have another point? Because I got to fix this guy because he doesn't know what he's talking about.
All right. I'm a huge college football fan. I wish there's some way to create a spring game for the NFL. Just, you know, someone bring a little more contact in during the springtime. Because it seems right now these OTAs, I understand, you know, you don't want to kill your players, but it would just seem like it would just add more excitement, and also we'd be able to get a little more of a better way to judge your players in the spring.
I know.
Just have, you know, a light contact. I mean, I'm talking, don't bring to the ground, but some kind of spring football would be great.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call.
Here's my problem.
Let's go.
Okay. When you have quarterbacks who are making $20 million a year, okay, and your cap is about $155 or so, it is a far, far too high percentage. Okay.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with that, but that's the market right now.
But you know what? It's to the league's detriment, because what you have are teams now that are going to be so lopsided as we're getting more and more $20 million quarterbacks. You have salary caps that are too weighted in favor of quarterbacks that these teams are going to have trouble paying other guys. Backup quarterbacks, and we know this for a long time, the backup quarterback situation in this league has been rather putrid for quite a while because nobody can afford to pay a decent backup quarterback anymore. Look, there were folks old school, okay, I admit it, back in the 70s. Look, the Giants had Phil Sims, Jeff Rutledge, and Jeff Hostetler on their roster at the same time.
Yeah, but see, then the flip side is now the talent pool is spread out more. That's better for the league. That's why there's so much parity. And that's why a team could have 2 wins 1 year and then have double-digit victories.
Like Ryan Nassib. He's a nice guy, and I think he's a pretty talented player. But he's nowhere near the talent that Jeff Hostetler and Jeff Rutledge were. Those guys were accomplished starters in this league for a number of years at different teams. And the Giants had all three of them at one time. The level of quarterback play, you know, in this league drops off significantly anytime you lose a starter. In fact, for the most part, you pretty much tell all these coaches, if you lose your starting quarterback to injury, your season's going in the toilet. That's not right. It's not right.
That's why you need to find young guys
who
you can groom.
That's why you need to put a cap on the quarterback salary so that you don't have owners cripple themselves giving all the money to quarterbacks. Cam Newton's lifetime record's 31-33 with zero playoff wins, and he's now
going to
make
too.
$20 million a year?
Jay Cutler,
are you serious?
But I don't think, Paul, you can look at it just based on the record. First of all, there's three facets of a football team. I don't need to teach you the basics.
I got you.
Okay?
I got you.
It is unfair, and this is always done in the NFL, where everything is always on the quarterback, and that's unfair. Because
sure it is.
Not every quarterback has the benefit of a strong defense, or you have maybe the lack of a running game.
Special
not great
teams.
Pass
I get,
protection.
I get all of that.
A million situations,
I get all
so I don't like to go based on a quarterback's record. But you do need a quarterback. I would agree with you. If you feel that this player gives you stability and the opportunity to be competitive – the mindset in this league now is we have to pay that quarterback. Why? Because then the next team that's in our division is going to scoop him up and give him the extra $5 million. That's the mindset, Paul, across the league right now.
See, what I was trying to tell John yesterday, my thought is, let's say you're going to have $155 million salary cap for all teams. What I'm saying is, and I'm not sure how you can functionally make this work because teams weight the salaries and they give bonuses and they're able to kind of shuffle money around. But my thought was that within the team salary cap, there needs to be a salary cap strictly for the quarterback position because it has become such a specialized position. It has become not just the heart, but the lungs, the kidney, and the liver of every single team's fate. That it's just not right. You're destroying teams, you know, when their quarterback gets hurt, or if they're simply just hamstrung that they can't afford to fill out the rest of their roster with any more good players. It seems criminal to me. So what I'm proposing is, and pick a number, make it $15 million, make it $20 million. Come up with a number and say within your salary cap, this is the amount of money that you're allowed to spend on the quarterback position. Now, it's your choice if you want to spend all of it on a starter and then give the second string guy nickels and dimes, whatever's left over. Or if you want to have three quarterbacks on your roster, well, guess what, pal? Find a way to divvy up that money amongst three guys if you want to. Or if you say, I'm not paying the 20 mil max to Peyton Manning. He's only going to get 12. I'm going to give 8 to Matt Hasselbeck.
Yeah.
I'm going to give 8 to Matt Hasselbeck.
Okay.
You know, because, again, what I'm suggesting is a sub-cap figure just for the QBs. And this way, you can still have the flexibility of if you want 2 or if you want 3. And if you want to go out and sign a second guy who's a veteran, or a second guy who's a fifth-round draft pick who's willing to work for a pile of beans. I'm still giving you flexibility to do that.
Well, it's just a matter of whether or not the star quarterbacks are going to want to agree to that. Remember, this would be a union thing that they'd have to negotiate with respect to the CBA. Well, it's easier sometimes said than done.
They'll never go for it. I get that. But it's better for the game.
Well, but what about the perspective that I'm throwing out about separating teams from other teams with how they file out and round out the rest of the roster.
One other thing I want to throw out, Paul,
before I let you continue. Look at the Detroit Lions. I'm going to use the Lions as an example. The Lions, not only did they put themselves in a tough salary cap position with Matthew Stafford's contract, and give credit to the Lions. They had a very productive season. They are paying Calvin Johnson on top of that, and they were paying Ndamukong Suh. You had three guys eating up the majority of your cap space. It wasn't just Stafford's contract.
Right.
It was multiple players. So while you say, yes, the quarterback contract alone, I think, puts a lot of pressure on teams and how they have to work
across
out the
board.
Across the board. I think that where teams get into trouble is not just the quarterback contract. It's that we now have to pay one star-studded wide receiver and the defensive lineman. So when you're paying top money to three separate positions, of course, it's going to be very difficult to have solid backups in place.
Well, without question.
I'm not disputing
that every team has their two or three stars that they're going to give a high percentage of their money to. I'm not disputing that at all. What I'm saying, though, is that unlike the wide receiver position, where let's just say your star wide receiver, your Pro Bowl receiver who's making, I don't know, 14 mil, he gets hurt. You know what? It's a lot easier to find a wide receiver who can fill that spot than it is to find a backup quarterback who's going to give you a competent level of play. The quarterback position has become so important, so specialized. There is such a dearth of experienced quarterbacks out there who can step in. If Tony Romo gets hurt, the Dallas Cowboys have no chance of making the playoffs this year.
Well, when they had Kyle Orton, they had to pay him a lot of money, which
bingo.
I agree with you. Yeah, they gave him about, $7-8 million.
Whatever it was.
The exact number. You're right. So it is a costly investment when you bring in a veteran. However, Paul, we've also seen situations where Tom Brady comes in for Drew Bledsoe, and Matt Flynn came in for Aaron Rodgers, and Flynn
did
okay
between.
Because he was solid within the system. You're right. It's rare. I'm not going to deny that. But once again, I think it helps balance out the pool of players across the league. You know, what's great about the NFL, and maybe a lot of people disagree with me on this, compared to the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball, you have a great deal of parity. And I like it when a team can have a very rough go in 2014, Paul, and then all of a sudden flip the switch in 2015.
See, I'm anti-parity.
You can't do that.
I don't like it.
You can't. Well, but the salary cap helps that because it prevents teams from being able to lock up all the stars at once.
Okay.
I mean, that's what the whole point of the salary cap is, too.
All right.
Not
see,
just the quarterback.
I wish you could have watched this league in the 70s because it was a great league. Even in the 80s, it was a great league. And there was no salary cap, and there was no widespread, unrestricted free agency.
There were less teams, though, too. Keep that in mind.
A few. And you know what? You had the golden years of football in the 70s and the 80s. The Dolphins and teams and the Cowboys and the Niners and the Bears and the Giants and the Redskins. You had a plethora of top shelf teams who, you know, were so good. The Steelers, the Raiders. I mean, what was wrong with that? You know, the same team didn't win every year. You did have a few dynasties in there that you know, were able to multiply some of their championships. Again, don't get me wrong, it happened. But, you know, that was a great time for the league as opposed to now, which it is so parity-driven. And there are so many teams that will be destroyed. I mean, if the Steelers lost Ben Roethlisberger to a broken leg in week 3, what are they doing? It's just not. No team should be so dependent on one player that their season goes in the toilet if that guy is hurt. And you could name any team you want, Lance. This is where I challenge you. Name any team you want and tell me that their best pass rusher or their best receiver or their best running back gets hurt and they're in the toilet. I would say that's not the case. But at quarterback, it is more times than not.
Well, you could use,
they're cooked.
You could use the Arizona Cardinals as an example last season where they not only lost their starter, they lost their backup too. It impacted their ability to go deep into the postseason. But they did have a very strong defense, and they had a decent running game, which helped them at least manipulate their system so that they were able to not have to expose the quarterback and finish out strong and still get to the playoffs.
But, of course, this watered-down, parity-driven league allows for that to happen.
Because of the talent pool being spread out. And maybe some divisions are not as strong as others.
No question.
That. However, the Arizona Cardinals did play in what you could argue is one of the toughest divisions in the NFL. So
Agreed.
That would at least counter that argument with respect to Arizona last season.
I mean, I would just say this, and let me just address the Giant fan out there for a minute. You know, you remember the Parcells era very well, and the Giants won 2 championships during that era, okay? Think of the great rivalries that the Giants had in those days with the Redskins, the Gibbs Redskins, the Walls 49ers, the Ditka Bears. I mean, that was great stuff. That was great stuff. Even the Vikings for a while there with Dennis Green, they were really tough. They had the greatest offense in the world, supposedly, when they were flinging it around. I mean, those were great teams, high-powered teams, multiple superstars at multiple positions. There was nothing wrong with that game, man. That was a great game. And today, because of the way the salary cap works, or the way free agency works, the way the entire parity-driven philosophy has taken this league, you have a much different scenario. And part of that is because we are going out of whack with salaries on quarterbacks. That is a big, big part of this.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Still an opportunity for you to call in as we take you till the top of the hour. Still an opportunity for you to reflect on the 70s and 80s, just as much as Paul DeTino. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. We'll get to more of your tweets. Remember, the question for the program is, who do you think is going to lead the Giants in tackles? I know a number of people weighing in. We've threw out a number of tweets. We'll continue to throw out more. Let's check in first with Frank in Tampa, who I know is probably going to want to reminisce with you. Frank, what's happening?
I would like to, but, Paul, we're not going to see any more Unitas and Morals or Young and Montanas for a long, long time.
So, Frank, bring us back to the 21st century, will you? How about that?
Sure. But, Paul, you know, your idea is a great one. The problem is, you know, you just saw all these contracts that were just signed, you know, by Roethlisberger and Newton and all those guys. They're not going to give back any of that money. So, you know, you couldn't start what you wanted for at least 5 years till their contracts expire.
Matt Ryan's getting $20 million. How many championships has he been to?
Yeah, I agree. But unfortunately, you know, no one ever gave any money back in this league.
We've developed this parity-driven philosophy of how we're going to deal with the league. Okay, and then on top of that, now we've skewed the salaries so top-heavy for the quarterbacks, we've compounded the problem, in my opinion. Anyway.
You know what I want to ask you guys? Do you know the weights that you see on the roster, on the website? I know very often, you know, they keep the weights on there that, you know, guys had when they came into the league, but, you know, a few of them seem to have changed a bit. Do you know when the last time those would have been updated?
Well, they normally are pretty much on top of it on the website. I know that usually once the 53-man roster gets finalized, Frank, they'll probably go over each and every individual player to make sure that the weight and the height is as closest to the current stance for that player. I'm not exactly sure on a weekly basis if that's what you're alluding to, if they're double-checked. But once the 53 is finalized, that will be certainly updated to as close as the measurement as the player currently stands.
Sure.
Because I was taken aback a bit by Jones, you know, the kid from Canada. He came in, and I know when he played up there and when he first came to the Giants, he was listed at 295. Now they got him at 318, and, you know, they were saying he's too small to play guard. But, you know, either he put on 30 pounds or 25 pounds or, you know, the weight's wrong, one or the other.
Remember, he played for 2 years in the CFL. My suspicion is that the CFL number that came down from Canada was the number that he came into the CFL with. That's my suspicion. I didn't ask him how much he weighed. I just saw him the other day. I didn't ask him. But that would be my guess, that that 295 is what he went into the CFL with. Again, giving him 2 more years to grow and then come down here, I suspect that it would be higher.
Because it gets back to your question, Frank, how often was the CFL updating his weight as he continued to play in that league?
Right. And speaking of weights, you know, I was listening to Beeson talk about, Kennard, you know, and his size, said, you know, he thinks he goes about 255 or something. And, you know, got me thinking, you know, he's probably bigger than Demontre Moore. You know, if Moore doesn't work out, you know, do you think there's some potential for that kid to grow into being a pass rushing defensive end?
You're talking about
Devon Kennard, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Kennard's not a defensive end. Kennard is going to be a linebacker. Don't even think about tweeners. Don't do that to me. He's not a tweener.
He played a little defensive end at USC, but obviously
not
the
here.
College game and the NFL game is different. I would agree, Frank, with Paul. I think they probably envision him as a linebacker. However, Paul, with that being said, I don't think it's a stretch if perhaps they use Frank's philosophy and bring him down on the line here or there for certain plays.
We saw him play stand-up on the line in December last year and come out blitzing from that position. I got no problem if they want to stack five, you know, up in a passing situation. He's the fifth guy up there, and they're sicking him after the quarterback. We saw how he could do that. So that's certainly within his repertoire.
Yeah, because he's definitely a stout-looking kid, you know. So I'd like to see Spags utilize him any way possible. You know,
absolutely.
And, the last thing I was wondering – we worry about Beeson getting hurt, and the other thing I worry about is, you know, somebody, you know, being able to cover those tight ends on third down, and, you know, this is probably a stretch as well, but with his size on third downs, is it possible that kid, the safety, could play in there, the big kid? Can't think of his name.
Who are we talking about? There's so many kids at safety. You got him at least.
The one that was hurt, Cooper Taylor.
Cooper Taylor.
The possibility he could play in the middle on third downs?
Well, Taylor was a guy that was known for coming down into the box when he was at Richmond, right before he was drafted with the Giants. You're envisioning him, if I'm getting this correct, Frank, as sort of like a middle linebacker? Is that what you're
doing? Third down only, passing down.
Third down passing.
I could see him as the third safety pseudo coverage linebacker, nickel linebacker, dime linebacker per se, but no, middle linebacker, that's not him.
Not even third down now?
No.
I would think that would be maybe tough.
I know he's big, but he must be, I guess he's lean. Huh? He's not really packed, even though he's 230 or something.
Huh? You need more bulk to do that.
And I think that also you need more reps on the football field, and that's what they're trying to do right now, Frank, because remember, he's been plagued by injuries, unfortunately, since he arrived here with the Giants.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for your time, guys.
You got it, Frank. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. And we'll leave it at that. I know a number of people continue to throw out some more tweets. Paul and I will try to answer you back off the air, but we do appreciate everybody weighing in on who they think is going to lead the team in tackles this season. Some good conversation on the state of the NFL, thanks to Paul Dottino giving us a history lesson as well. If you want to reminisce about the 70s or 80s, feel free to throw out some tweets my way. I will be more than happy to go back and forth with you throughout the course of the evening. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. That is going to wrap up Big Blue Kickoff Live Wednesday's edition. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Well, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
Got through the field. He's got through. 35, 30.